Six times he represented the United States as a Ryder Cup player, finishing with a record of 17-8-3 and never being on a losing team. Twice he served as captain, winning in dramatic fashion in 1983 and losing in 1987 at his Muirfield Village Golf Club in a history-shaping Ryder Cup that helped redirect the event's future. He was also a four-time President's Cup captain. As the first ball in the 2025 Ryder Cup is almost airborne, what an honor it is to welcome the great Jack Nicklaus to Musings on Golf. Jack, thanks so very much for joining us.
I'm happy to join you, Kelly. Nice to be here.
Thanks, Jack. I want to start with a Ryder Cup that you actually didn't qualify for in 1979 at the Greenbrier, which the U.S. won. But that was most significantly, that was the first year that all of Europe came into the Ryder Cup. And your talk in 1977 with Lord Derby, who was the president of the British PGA at the time, really was the impetus to adding continental Europe. Jack, wondering, was that talk something that you decided to do on your own because of your feeling about where the Ryder Cup was headed?
Well, you know, I suppose it was on my own. I know that the guys, you know, they really enjoyed and it was a great privilege to make the Ryder Cup team and represent your country, but nobody wanted to play the matches. As a matter of fact, in 77, Tom Weisskopf skipped the matches and went on a sheep hunt. But anyway, I said, you know, I think I need to talk to John Derby, Lord Derby, about what's going on. They were no longer the Great Britain and Ireland. They were the European PGA. And so I said, I got Henry Poe, who was then president of the PGA, and I said, Henry, come with me. I want to talk to John about what's going on. So I went in and talked to him and told him about what I just said there, that they loved making the team, but nobody wanted to play the matches. We won basically every time. And that they had great players like Ballesteros and Langer and Garcia, some other players that joined the team that were part of the European PGA. And Derby turned to me and he said, Jack, he says, you leave this with Henry and me. We'll take care of it. And the next time we had the Ryder Cup at Greenbrier, the European team was included.
And Jack, directly to your point from 1927 when the Ryder Cup was started through 1977, the United States won 18 of the 21 Ryder Cups. Since 79, the Europeans hold a 12-9-1 advantage. So it's the Ryder Cup, Jack, we know today is very different, is it not, from the Ryder Cups through those many years from the start up until things changed in 79?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No question about it. And I think much for the better. Great Britain and Ireland is a small little area compared to what all of Europe is and all the players that really actually play together. So I'm delighted that it's a European team now. I'm delighted that the American team sees competition and the European team sees competition in the Americas, and it's a great match.
Jack, you were a perfect 4-0-0 in your two Walker Cup appearances as an amateur. I'm wondering, what did you know about the Ryder Cup, and what were your impressions of the Ryder Cup before that first appearance at Royal Birkdale in 69?
Well, I don't know whether I had my real impressions of it. I mean, the Walker Cup was 59 and 61, and then I didn't play the Ryder Cup until 69. And I think, it was largely because of the players of the U.S. team had to be members of the PGA of America, had to go through their 4 or 5 years and their school and the whole bit. And I was eligible for the 77 team, but I had less than 6 months to make a 2-year team. And I didn't make it, even though I was U.S. Open champion, I didn't make the team because they didn't have any selections. That was all on numbers. But anyway, I didn't do that until finally 79 or 69 was the first year that I qualified. And Sam Snead was a captain, and we were all excited about playing it, but I didn't have any real thoughts about it. I know that the U.S. team won most every time, so it really wasn't much to think about.
Exactly. What was Captain Snead's reaction after you conceded the putt to Tony Jacklin? Did Sam say anything directly to you, Jack? Did he make his feelings known?
Oh, I don't know. I suppose Sam always made his feelings known somewhat. That was kind of, why would you do something like that? You know, but anyway, That was Sam. That's just Sam. Sam was a good guy, I think it was the right thing to do. Tony was the reigning British Open champion, and had he missed that little short putt, which was no more than 2 feet, under 2 feet probably, he'd have been roasted. He's still being roasted today.
Hey Jack, looking back, what's the best shot that you hit as a Ryder Cup player, and what's your best thrill as a Ryder Cup player?
Oh, I have no idea what best shot I hit. Maybe it was a putt I made, that little 5-footer had, or 6-footer, whatever it was, coming back down the hill in 69 to tie Jacklin. That was a pretty good putt I made there. And we had a pretty foolish first putt that I ran 5-6 feet by the hole. But anyway, that was a good shot. I don't remember any other shots that I hit that were eventful, but we all played a lot of good shots. It's just, I think we had more fun than anything else. I remember the one sort of ridiculous shot that I did was when I told Weisskopf to pick up his ball. We were playing at Muirfield, and I think we were two or three up with two to play around the 16th, and Tom was inside of me on the green. And I told him, "Don't go pick up your ball." He said, "What are you being? Go pick up your ball." I said, "I'm going to make this." Well, anyway, so he picked up his coin, and I made the putt, and the match was over. I mean, what a cocky thing to do. I mean, in those days, we could do that kind of stuff and get away with it. But you know, I'd be roasted today for doing something silly like that.
We're honored to be talking about the Ryder Cup with the great Jack Nicklaus here on Musings on Golf. Jack, as you know, Ryder Cup formats have frequently changed over the years. 1975 at Laurel Valley, Arnold was the captain. There were two sets of singles matches on that Sunday. And obviously, nowadays, it's just one set. You lost to Brian Barnes of England in the morning, the pipe-smoking Mr. Barnes. And then is it true that you then asked Arnold, please make sure that I play him again in the afternoon?
Well, he couldn't really do that. I don't remember whether he did or not, but obviously I would like to redeem myself. But yeah, Brian beat me in the morning. And, in the Ryder Cup, the captain puts a list of players in an envelope, and then they match up the envelopes. So, I mean, Arnold thought that I should be playing last. Maybe he didn't. I don't know. I'm not even sure where we played. But and I turned up with Barnes twice. Now, the funny thing about Barnes, Barnes was an alcoholic at that point in time. And Brian says to me, he says, "I beat you twice drunk." I mean, you could never tell. He was a functional alcoholic. And I remember about 18 years later, my son Gary played with Brian at a European Tour tournament. And Brian told Gary, he says, "This is the first tournament I've played in 18 years sober." And, Brian was a good player. You never know he'd ever had a drink, but what a good guy. And, he whipped my tail pretty good two rounds in a row. So, kudos to Brian Barnes.
Absolutely. If you could take us into the team room for the week of a Ryder Cup, President's Cup, et cetera. And this week, Captain Donald, for example, Jack, except for the Højgaard twins, he's got the same team as he had 2 years ago. Keegan has four rookies. I'm wondering, how did you go about, getting your guys to play as a team, 1 week out of the year, looking to create that camaraderie and that chemistry? What did you do?
I didn't really do anything. I felt like they had played well enough to earn their right to make the team. They all knew how to play or they wouldn't be there. And I didn't think it was my position to tell them how to play. My job was to make sure I had plenty of fresh towels, spikes, tees, sunscreen, all the silly stuff. But my job obviously was to pair them together. And what I usually did was I went into the start of the week. I said, "Okay, guys, put down on a piece of paper who you'd like to play with this week. And also put on the same piece of paper who you don't want to play with." So we didn't end up with any conflicts. And I always just sort of looked at players. I tried to pair like players together, a couple long hitters or short hitters, whatever it is. I remember I played in St. Louis with Dave Stockton, and we got whipped 6-5 in the morning. We were playing alternate shot. Well, Dave wasn't used to playing, 9 iron wedges out of the rough, and I wasn't used to playing 2 irons out of the fairway. So so we didn't match very well. That's all right. But so we figured that out. So I let the guys sort of make up their own pairings, get them going, get them feeling like they were part of the process. And then come game day, I knew who I thought was playing well and who wasn't playing well, and then I just paired them up.
Speaking of partners, did you have a favorite Ryder Cup partner in your 6 Ryder Cups?
Well, I think Arnold and I played pretty well together. I think I played pretty well with Watson. Those are guys that you'd like to have as your partner. They're good players.
Indeed. You and I both live not too far from PGA National Resort here in Palm Beach Gardens, and I know the drama with Lanny Watkins' chip shot, wedge shot on 18 to clinch the 83 matches. You literally, Jack, kissed the man's divot after he hit the shot. Where does that shot for you, where does that shot rank in terms of Ryder Cup shots that you've seen, been involved with?
Well, a pretty good one. It won the Ryder Cup for us. You know, he had this little wedge in the green. I don't know what it was, 99 yards or something like that. And he hit the wedge in about, 12 inches from the hole. Ryder Cup was over. And, I just sort of, it was just a gesture, I suppose. I just reached out, bent down and kissed the divot and said, "Nice going, Lanny." You know, we always kidded Lanny that week about needing a wheelbarrow to carry you-know-what.
Boy, he was a gutsy Ryder Cup player.
Yeah, Lanny's always been a gutsy player. He was a caution to the wind. Let's go for it.
But it was interesting. He and Larry Nelson, I mean, they two very different personalities, Jack. They paired extremely well together. For what reason, Jack? Why would two very different personalities play well together in the heat of the Ryder Cup?
Well, I think that I don't really know, except that Larry is pretty calm and Lanny's pretty fiery, but they both play pretty similar games. So they hit it about the same distance, and one would calm the other and one would excite the other. I would think they would probably do pretty well together. That would be a good pairing.
We'll hear the rest of my interview with the great Jack Nicklaus right after these words from our friends at William & Harry and Titleist. America, this is your moment. William & Harry's limited edition spirit shoe is here to honor the Ryder Cup so every fan can feel like part of Team USA from the first tee to the final putt. Two head-turning designs, premium deerskin, 100% water-resistant with spikeless grip and all-day comfort. Just so you know, there's a limited run on these shoes, so don't sit this one out. Pre-buy now at williamandharry.com. Get into spirit, get into comfort.
Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X are the best performing, most consistent in the game. So how does the best get better? You start by listening to the best players in the world. You experiment, iterate, validate. You trust the best process to create the best golf ball the game has ever known. The all-new Pro V1 and Pro V1X. More speed off the tee, more control with your irons, more spin with the wedges, and more opportunity to shoot your lowest score.
Hey, Jack, at the outset of this interview, I mentioned that although the U.S. team came up short at Muirfield Village in 87, it was a history-shaping Ryder Cup in terms of helping redirect the event's future. Can you elaborate a little bit on what that meant? What was significant beyond the wins or losses in 87?
Well, prior to 87, the Ryder Cup never made a dime. It was just sort of the television people didn't want to broadcast it because it lost money. Nobody really followed it that much because we won every time. And all of a sudden now we've got the European team coming in there. And Mickey Powell was the president of PGA at the time. And I turned to Mickey and I said, get me the Ryder Cup. I said, we'll teach you guys how to make some money and show you where the Ryder Cup should go. I don't know. He did that. You know, after we did that, they haven't given us the Ryder Cup back. We'd love to have had it back. We haven't had it. But anyway, we did that. We made money. The PGA of America sort of maybe took that model that we used and sort of let it grow into what it is today. We're very proud to be that. I, of course, you know, I was at my expense. I was the first U.S. captain to lose on U.S. soil. It's okay. I could handle that. But it was a great Ryder Cup. Tony Jacklin had a great team. And Ballesteros, Garcia, Langer, Lyle, you name it. He had a lot of really good players in, and they won.
Jack, you mentioned Tony Jacklin. He had as much to do, certainly on the European side, with gathering the troops and fomenting really a winning environment. He was a tremendous influence on the European side for the Ryder Cup.
Tony was a good captain. He did a great job. He was a good player. They were all respected Tony because he was probably the best player of the bunch over there for a long time. And Tony was given the responsibility to try to bring the Ryder Cup back, and he did. He did a good job.
Jack, it's interesting to see the home dominance, at least in recent Ryder Cups. 8 of the last 9 Ryder Cups, the home team has prevailed. U.S. team, for goodness sakes, hasn't even won since 1993 over in Europe. Why is it so hard, Jack, to win an away Ryder Cup, at least these days?
Well, I don't know. I think that usually it's the teams are pretty well balanced. They're pretty even. And I think home territory and home fans have a little bit to do with it. I think the Europeans will have a tough time at Bethpage this week, just like the Americans had a tough time in Rome 2 years ago. But it was, that's all right. I mean, good gracious. I mean, you go play the Yankees and the Red Sox. You know, you go to Boston and stuff, and you go to New York and stuff. Same thing. It's no different. And I think it's kind of neat that the home team feels like it's got the support and they feel like they play better at home. You know, you just got to break through that barrier when you travel.
Dugan Bradley made the decision, Jack, to not pick himself and purely be the captain. Had you been in the exact same shoes as Keegan, would you have selected yourself?
I don't know. It depends on how I was playing. You know, if I thought that I should have played on the team, I probably would have selected myself. I never felt like I was in that position. I'm 83. I probably could have selected myself, but I'm not sure. But I think back in 83, we went strictly by points.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's right.
And I don't know. I don't think I was all that good in 83. But today they select. Gracious, what did they pick? 6 players.
That's right.
It's a lot of players. I think it's almost a little bit better to go on the point system. I think it's a little too much responsibility and too many personalities get involved when you start selecting. I know even when you're captain and you've got 10 guys are going to play and you're going to leave 2 out, you get into personalities and leave 2. I remember at Muirfield, I had 2 fellas that were warming up to play in the second round of the singles. And we didn't do very well in the morning. And I went back and told them both they weren't going to play in the afternoon. They were not very happy, and I didn't feel very good about it as a captain. But, you know, those are the things you have to do when you think it's the right thing for the team. And, when you got 6 players, it's that's a lot.
Yeah, it's always seemed to me to be a lot. And I don't know exactly what that number is as well, Jack, but maybe it's 8. 8 make it in 4, but 6 seems to, as you said, it just seems to leave a lot of variables in there.
Well, I remember I had, I don't remember if it was the President's Cup or the Ryder Cup. I think I had 10 and 2 selections, and I skipped number 11 and went to 12 and 13. And, you know, I've always felt very uncomfortable about making that not picking the one fellow that time. And, every time I see him, I sort of, Jack, why did you do that? You know, but I mean, that's what you sometimes have to do.
We are nearing the end of our special time with Jack Nicklaus here on Musings on Golf. Jack, going back to what we talked about of your meeting with Lord Derby, I would imagine that if you look at your Ryder Cup legacy beyond the golf course, perhaps most of all, you know, you pushing for Europe to be included is kind of your legacy. Is that a fair statement?
I think it probably is. I don't know whether anybody else had the nerve enough to go do that or not, but you know, I felt pretty strong about it. I felt like they were no longer Great Britain, Ireland. They were the European PGA. And John Darby was the president of the European PGA. So why shouldn't you include the European players? I just felt it was common sense, and he did too. And here we go.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, also just the sheer growth of golf worldwide, it has to make you feel great. Number one, to see how the game has expanded in such a massive way, and to have it reflected in the President's Cup, the Ryder Cup, massive, big international events.
Well, I think the international events, the President's Cup, the Ryder Cup, are two events that the players look forward to playing in. They're exciting. The public looks forward to seeing them. They're both a little bit different. You know, one does not include the European players. One includes the rest of the world. There's a lot of good players around the world, and we're getting more good players around the world. Whether it's I've always felt like maybe the ultimate thing that might happen is the Ryder Cup and the President's Cup merge, and you have sort of a king of the hill between the world, Europe, and the U.S., and the winning team gets to keep playing. I think that would be a little bit of a more of an incentive for the team to win and work hard, because they get to play again the next time. I don't know. It's maybe a little bit of both, but I don't think the PGA of America and the PGA Tour, you know, they both own those events, so I doubt if that's going to happen. But I just think it for the event, I think that would make it a little bit better. But they're both pretty great the way they are. So, you know, why do I want to get my nose in trying to change something that's successful?
Hey, Jack, two more questions, and the last one will be Ryder Cup related. But I just wanted to ask you about Lieutenant Colonel Dan Rooney and Folds of Honor. And I've known Dan for some time. You've built golf course for him, and everything that they're doing and your involvement with Folds of Honor. Jack, what, 70,000 scholarships, I believe, roughly, that they've awarded to children whose parents have been killed in action. It's an unbelievable charity. It's unbelievable what Lieutenant Colonel Dan has done.
Yeah, I think it's actually 74,000 now, Kelly. And Colonel Dan is a great guy. And he's the world's best salesman too. And he absolutely believes wholeheartedly with his whole heart and soul that what he's doing is the right thing. And I think it is. He's educated all these families of fallen soldiers, fallen warriors, and first responders. And of course, now he's done American Dunes up in Grand Haven, Michigan, and we've got plans to hopefully shortly have an American Dunes South, and we hopefully get that going. Maybe we'll be just two of them. Maybe there'll be more of them. Raise more money for families. I know there were 7,000 people they turned down, families they turned down last year, and they don't want to turn down families, but they just didn't have the funds to take care of all of them. But they're working on it. But I think Dan Rooney is, he's a star among stars.
Question about it. All right, Mr. Nicholas, let's close with this. I'm going to ask you for a Ryder Cup 2025 pick. I know you've never been to Bethpage, but I know also you still follow the elite game very closely. In your opinion, Jack Nicklaus, who gets to raise the Ryder Cup in victory on Sunday, and why?
Well, if I don't pick the U.S. team, I get lynched. No, I think the U.S. team. I think if you look at world rankings, the average of the world rankings is about 11.7 or something like that for the U.S. team. It's like 22 or 23 for the European team. But the only trouble is you've got John Rahm and Tyrrell Hatton. John Rahm's 75 and Hatton's like 25 or something like that. And that sort of takes their average up. Both teams are really good. So, and I think that there is more experience on the European team than actually on the U.S. team. We got four rookies, as you stated earlier, on the U.S. team, and virtually the same team for Europe. It's going to be a tough match, but it is on U.S. soil. It is at Bethpage, a place where I think most of the Americans have played and played pretty well. So, go USA.
Jack Nicklaus, it's been a real treat and a real honor. Thank you for being part of Musings on Golf and Ryder Cup Week 2025.
Okay, Charlie, my pleasure.